SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, after a brisk cold shower from Andy Beyer and Johnny D joining us. And Johnny, I guess we all should clean our glasses maybe after listening to Andy.
Yeah. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
I really respect Andy Beyer's knowledge and contribution to the game, but I just can't share his disappointment in Justify and the Triple Crown series. You know, his points, I understand his points that he was making. I understand what he was trying to say, and I do kind of share his sentiment, his belief in that two-year-olds, three-year-olds, however you want to, two-year-olds basically into their three-year-old year are being treated differently nowadays. But I don't accept that as an indictment of Justify and his performance and his foes in these races. Because in my thinking, I've always found, you don't hear me making top 10 lists and you know, ranking the greatest horses of all time, because I hate to do that in other sports too, because I think we need to look at each athlete in the context of their time against their contemporaries. In other words, if you want to tell me Babe Ruth was the greatest hitter of all time or the greatest athlete of all time, greatest baseball player, you know, it's hard to argue. I mean, when he hit home runs, one year he hit more home runs than all but three teams added up. Himself, he hit more home runs than like all but three teams added together. So in the context of his era and his age and what he was doing, he was great. So what Justify has done in the context of this age, in the context of what Andy described, which is true, and he's absolutely correct. In that context, this horse has done an incredible thing. The second point is that one of the keys to what Baffert did with Justify, one of the absolute keys, was that he needed this horse not to have a dominating race, not to have that exclamation point that Andy and the rest of us admittedly so badly wanted. The key was to keep him within himself, to keep him from winning, keep him winning without going outside his comfort zone. And that meant, and I think Mike Smith was in on the play too, don't ask this horse to open up when he doesn't need to. Don't ask him to kick away from the field when it wasn't necessary. If you're going to beat Barbazzo by a half length, that's fine. If you beat him by a neck, that's even better. Keep something in the tank, in reserve, especially considering where this horse went in 111 days. That was critical. Is he one of the greatest of all time? For me, he is. For Andy, he's not. But, you know, my all-time, I don't know what Exterminator was doing. I don't know what the time period was or Citation. I mean, I can read about it and everything. But I know what today's game is like. I live it. I breathe it. I do it every day. And in today's game, what he did was great. There is no other word. You know, that word gets tossed around freely. There's no other word than great to describe what he did in context of this day this age against these foes. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, I don't want to hear anybody saying, well, who'd he beat? You know who he beat? He beat everybody. And at the Derby, we were saying, oh, this Derby field, this is the greatest, you know, this is one of the best fields collected. Okay, Audible couldn't come back. Good Magic, he met him, he traded blows with him in the center of the ring, and he put him away. He did what he had to do. He did it in 111 days. He's big, he's bad, and he's beautiful. I'm going to enjoy it. I do not share Andy's disappointment, but however, I respect his opinion immensely. And I do think that he made some excellent points. The other thing we have to be careful of, and this is funny because I first experienced this when I was working in the Santa Anita press box years, long, long time ago. It was one of the handicappers there, the Daily Handicappers, very sharp guy, great handicapper. And it was like late in the afternoon, and he was a heavy gambler. He backed his opinions, which I love. About midway through the afternoon, or late in the afternoon, he threw up his hands. He wasn't having a very good day. He threw up his hands in desperation and said, these horses aren't running to my figures. So, you know, it's like we make figures, we try and put measurements, and I think the buyers are excellent. They do an excellent job. But that's not the whole story. You know, the low figure in the Preakness. We talked about this. You and I talked about it. The low figure in the Preakness, I didn't think it reflected the kind of race that Justify ran an outstanding race. It was outstanding in my book. Upon further review, when they first hit the wire, I was disappointed. But upon further review, when we talked about it, I was impressed. So the 90 figure didn't bother me, except to say he didn't get to run fast because he was busy out in the middle of the track in the mud. So anyway, that's my analysis of the second guest of the morning statement.
Well, then, to move away from specifically addressing, you know, Andy's thoughts, Johnny, your full weekend reflection and culminating with Belmont, but there was obviously way more than just the Belmont to deal with, and you were featured at Mohican Sun. We'll talk about the weekend for you and the ultimate ending of this three race series that I think is going to take a while to comprehend.
Yeah, I thought just to talk about Belmont Stakes Day, and also Friday, what a fantastic card. Absolutely incredible. It's the kind of what did I say? It was your grandfather's racing. And maybe better, because now we've got the Met Mile on that card and just surrounding stakes and a collection of, you know, I think you're really starting to see now trainers pointing for specific races that they know are going to be on that card. They know the schedule now, and it's really, I mean, Belmont Park deserves a big shout of approval for just a fantastic wagering day and spectator day for fans of the sport. It really was, from top to bottom, just an absolutely fantastic card. I was at Mohican Sun doing a race-by-race analysis with DRF's Mike Vesey and Mike Lutansky, who's a Boston-area sports talk host, and had a great time. They had a huge ballroom full of fans who were there to welcome home Justify and the Triple Crown. And throughout the afternoon, as I said, it was just each race you had a chance to analyze a great race. And I just thought it was absolutely fabulous day of handicapping. And, you know, I was so happy that the weather cooperated. Churchill was knocked around and Pimlico was deluged. So it was nice to finally have a fast track for the entire card, not just for Belmont Stakes.
Very much. And I think it also, in terms of variety, it was important for Justify to get a dry fast track, and I thought that I guess maybe I hadn't thought about this until now. When you talk about the wet track and you think about the change in silks, but you know, the fact that he's gonna in the mud in Baltimore and Louisville with a white jacket. And he was pristine, and then he, you know, then he switches to this China Horse Club jacket, and it's going to make for some interesting imagery when they put the three pictures together.
Yeah, it's interesting because each race now has a stamp. In other words, if you see a picture of Justify winning, and you can see Justify, you know it wasn't the Preakness. If you see a picture of Justify on a wet track, then you know, and he's wearing the white, excuse me, the white silks, you know it was the Derby. And if you see a picture of Justify with the orange, you know, or the red, you know it was the Belmont. So each stakes race has its own stamp now.
Put some stamps on Saturday, Johnny, and some of the wagering thoughts and impressions that stayed with you?
Yeah, you know, somebody said to me, well, did you crush Belmont Stakes Day? And I said, you know, I had many chances, but I just couldn't stuff the puck in the net. You know, it was like one of those scrambles in front of the net with guys falling everywhere, and you're slamming at the puck, and the goalie just happens to be there, and then you hit the post, and then you sail one over the net. I mean, I just could never never put that puck in the back of the net. And the greatest example of that is the Belmont Stakes. I mean, I was Justified, unwavering, thought he'd win the Triple Crown. I mean, thought he'd win the Belmont Stakes. He was my I had no one else in first on any of my tickets. I had Hopberg as my key with Vino Rossi. I had no Gronkowski. We had a discussion last week, I think it was. We talked about Gronkowski a little bit briefly. We talked about him breaking, and I said, "Oh, those European horses—they never break," and he didn't break. So I was right about that. But what I missed, I think, and I should have, and this is what I should have, look, he's coming to the U.S. He's going a mile and a half for the first time. His first try on dirt. So many things against him. I did not give enough credit to the Chad Brown, Jose Ortiz factor. You know, Chad getting his horse ready, having him for a time, and you mentioned that. You mentioned that to me. You tried to wise me up. You said he's been with Chad for a while. True. Jose rides a lot for Chad. Their percentage is through the roof together. I should have paid attention. He knows that racetrack very well. He was an X factor that I didn't give enough respect to. And it was kind of that way most of the day for me. I hit some races that didn't blank the entire day. I just didn't have a big day. And the Belmont was kind of the crowning blow to me not having a big day. And, you know, I just misplayed it. It wasn't quite a ground ball through Buckner's legs, but it was definitely misplayed. And it kind of went that way for most of the day. I was all around it, never quite finding the mark. You know, I texted you because it's so great to see Edgar Prado win for Grand Motion and Spring Quality. And I had it actually written on my form there, thick, right next to Spring Quality's name, because you and Nick Tomorrow, who I listen to and love hearing you guys analyze the races, because I respect Nick's opinion and certainly your opinion. And when Spring Quality got up on the outside to win, I was like, oh, man, you know. And I had notes on the horse, and I just didn't put it together. And that was kind of the day, the whole day, just one of those days. The good news is they were racing the next day. It wasn't quite as... but they were racing.
It's funny. It's funny how that works.
Yeah. Like I heard a guy one day walking out of the track. He said to his buddy, hey, I hear they're going to do this again tomorrow.
Exactly.
And they did.
and they did is right, and they will continue. I was actually, yesterday, wasn't until midweek last week that I even realized that Belmont was going to run Sunday, and for them to turn things around, you know, they're not as practiced at it, to the big crowd turnaround as they are at Churchill, for instance. Both.
There was one. Yeah, Churchill just shuts down the next day. Well, of course, that's a mob.
Yeah, but they have Friday. Anyway, I mean, they turn around from Friday to Saturday, which
Friday
is
Friday to Saturday, absolutely.
Stunning.
Yes, you're 100% correct. Yes, I forgot about that. You're absolutely correct. The one thing I did want to kind of touch on is there's been this kind of social media bashing of Laurent Giroux and the whole thing, whether it was gamesmanship, whether it was a foul, whatever he was doing, you know, it's a combination of things. And in my way of thinking, I don't blame Florent at all for what he did. And I think part of it is with restoring hope. He got this horse running. This is my analysis. I'm not necessarily correct, but this is my analysis of the years that I've been watching racing, talking to riders, and been involved in the game. He got this horse running because his horse's only hope was to be close to the pace, like Noble Indy. His only hope was to be close to the pace. Once he got Restoring Hope running, the horse kind of ran off with him a little bit. He was a bit rank with him. So he rushed up. Now, you're on this horse, and he's rushing up. It's a Bob Baffert horse, and the other Bob Baffert horse is going for a triple crown. Florent Giroux did not want this horse to go head-to-head with Justify. That was not anybody's plan. So he then took this horse off the rail to the middle of the track, which riders will do to try and get a horse to relax, get him away from the other horse. And that's to get him to shut off a little bit. That's what I think. He was doing. That's what was in his mind. Now, had Noble Indy broken with the field and not broken a little slow and gone outward, he would have been out there maybe with Restoring Hope, and Giroux would not have been able to do that. But he was clear. He went over and he had room to get out there. He wasn't moving anybody out of it. Now, because Noble Indy broke a bit slowly and didn't have the same speed as Restoring Hope, he was caught behind him. Not next to him, behind him. And that's a big difference. Now, Giroux then, once he gets his horse to relax, by the time they hit the turn, he drops inside because now he's got the horse. He drops back inside and he gets off of Justify's hit. I didn't see anything wrong with it. I see how people could think there was something nefarious about it. But had Noble Indy been right on him and he pushed him out, it's another story. But he had room to get out, and his horse was ranked. I think he was just trying to get him to relax a little bit. That's my interpretation. I didn't see anything nefarious, and I'm always looking for nefarious stuff. Now, if you say to me, well, it seems kind of fishy. Yes, it looks fishy, but I don't think that's what was being done. That's my opinion because of the reasons I just outlined. So that's my thought. I just thought I'd get it out there.
No, I appreciate it on that from you, because as a long-time jock agent and race watcher, and you know, understanding how these decisions are made, and obviously we'll talk to Rich Migliori, we'll talk to Tony, we'll get added rider perspective. But if you watch the head-on in particular, and you see you see how they move through, you can't just watch the pan when you try to make determinations of what was going on in here. And because at first, I'll tell you, I live, and then the first replay, maybe two I saw, it did seem like Giroux in particular was going out in a certain direction into the turn. But you also see right away that he is getting the horse to try to settle. And then as he settles, he brings him into line and starts to stalk. And I'm sorry, No Belindi wasn't keeping up. And I know that Rapoli and Pletcher said, we never discussed the plan B. Well, the jockeys are jockeys. I mean, Ricardo Santana, he had a plan B. He went to save ground. And, he got jostled a little bit early, and then he, goes in 2-3 paths. I mean, the gates open and chaos ensues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you'll see, getting a horse off the rail and trying to get him to relax is not something you only see in the Belmont Stakes with Florent Giroux. You'll see it every day if you watch, races from tracks across the country. Jocks will take a horse out in the middle of the track, and you'll say, what's he doing? Even on the lead, you'll see a guy come off the rail 3-4 paths to try and get his horse to relax. It happens all the time, and you'll wonder, why is he losing so much ground? But, well, the horse is pulling too much with him, and he wants him to get him to relax a little bit.
Well, Johnny, just a couple minutes to wrap, and it sounds like are you coming back from Connecticut?
Motoring home as we speak.
I figure. Well, I'm going to get to John Gunther, but a quick postseason recap. Had a terrific three editions of the Express Bet Triple Crown Races wagering guides, and a lot of great information dispensed.
The guides really, I think, in the two previous races, we had a little lack of Gronkowski in this one. If you want, I think John White had a major wager to win on Justify, so he was behind Justify, and Eddie Olczyk had a Justify all. I think he had Hofberg maybe Hofberg, Vino Rossi, but I know it was Hofberg for sure. So he had that trifecta. So the lack of Gronkowski hurt us, and I was in a tough spot, because here I was in Connecticut at the Mohican Sun talking about the Belmont Stakes, and I had to make a crack that the horse Wentzylvania won earlier in the day. It's Wentz, Wentzylvania. Won earlier at Parks, and that now Gronkowski was running in the Belmont Stakes, and that the Eagles won the Super Bowl and the Patriots did not. Of course, that message did not go over very well here in the New England region. And then I had to eat my words afterwards when Gronkowski ran second. we didn't have enough Gronkowski in the guide, but you know what? These guys have become so popular. And I think that's owing to three factors, actually. Number one, the quality of the analysis. Number two, the quality of the guide. And number three, it's free. So those three factors.
How can you beat it? How can you beat it?
Have contributed to, and worth twice the price, I might add.
Johnny, I appreciate it. And safe travel home. We'll get more details about your weekend. I'm sure it featured any number of moments of frivolity and amusement. So I'm looking forward to hearing them. And I appreciate everything through the Triple Crown season. Thanks.
Another excellent. As the guy from the Hair Club for Men says, I'm not just the owner. I'm a customer. I listen to all the shows.
Johnny, thank you, buddy. Johnny D, everybody. And we come to the bottom of the hour. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back. John Gunther, who, along with daughter Tanya, made Justify possible by breeding him. We'll get some backstory and listen to John reflect on his involvement in racing, which started very modestly. I mean, he grew up on a farm, grew up in Western Canada, I want to say Alberta, and started with modest horses. And how is Saturday not a career peak for a breeder? John Gunther joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Raise the prices yesterday at the grocery store. Reckless man hanging out front, always gets ignored. Can we ever solve these problems in our changing world? Will our children ever get us to play out in the yard? There's a new cattle world that's taking over. It's got devils, it's got angels sitting on my shoulders.
We're back at the races. About 25 minutes to the top of the hour, and we'll spend it with John Gunther. And I've looked forward to this conversation a long time and have been a fan of John Gunther's breeding and racing operation. And one of my favorite early horses, and I think maybe the first Triple Crown horse, John, that you campaigned, Kimberlite Pipe.
Yeah, that goes back a long time.
that was your first Derby horse, yes?
That was the first Derby horse, yes. And we had a lot of fun with him. He actually ran a very good race in the Kentucky Derby. He got caught on the first turn and then bumped down the stretch, but he still ran a very credible race. And then he went on to the Preakness, and so it was quite exciting many years back, for sure.
Well, your involvement in the game has been as an owner, as a commercial breeder, and it obviously reaches an apex on Saturday. Had the privilege of being able to sit right behind you Saturday, and you seemed so relaxed and confident, and that, in fact, goes back to Preakness. You said after Preakness he's winning the Belmont. There's no question.
Yeah, he's such a tremendous athlete, and with that tremendous stride, I just figured, at the Belmont, he got the number one hole in that inside post. I felt it wouldn't bother him, and when I saw Mike Smith take the lead early, I just felt that, there's no way they're going to catch this horse with that tremendous stride that he has. And his mentality is, he's such a cool horse, nothing seems to bother him. He never turns a hair. And when I went down into the paddock for the race, you could see that physically, he actually even looked like he put on a little bit of weight since the Preakness. And, he had his ears pricked, and he really had his game face on for the race, so... I was very confident. Mind you, when they broke out of the starting gate, my heart was pounding so much I had to sit down for a bit. It was just so emotional, and everybody with us, they were in tears, and I was almost crying myself. It was so amazing. It's something that's very hard to describe.
John, you're going to clearly need to take more time, and for you and Tanya to soak this all in. But it was all coming to a head from fairly early this winter between Vino Rosso and then Justifies. Lightning Strike emergence, not to mention some horses that are campaigning abroad. And it just felt like everything that you and Tanya have worked toward just all fell into place.
Well, it's that crop of 2015, it really is incredible. To have two in the Kentucky Derby, and then Vino Rosso and Justify both make it to the Belmont as well. Then having Without Parole in Europe that we bred, he was aiming for the 2,000 guineas, and he had a slight stone bruise, and we had to miss it. And for him to come back and win a stake, the Harrod Stakes in England, that was amazing in itself. The ground wasn't to his liking because it rained that day, and the turf was very soft. But in the race, his class kicked in, and he still got it done. And now we're heading to Royal Ascot for the St. James Palace, and he's the anti-post favorite for the race. So that whole 2015 crop is amazing. Not only to mention, we had another one called On the Warpath that won a couple of races in England, and then Darley Stud approached us to buy him, and it's just been an amazing 3-year-old crop this year.
There's been plenty of success, and you breed a little to race. You keep certain horses. I know you've been quoted as saying it's important to sell and underwrite everything else. Talk about the approach, and please fold in Tanya's expertise and her cultivation. You really, you're the ultimate breeder because you bred her too.
Yeah. I bred two Triple Crown winners, Tanya and the horse. Yeah, it's well, when you're in the breeding business, you for a small farm like Glenwood, you need the cash flow to keep Glenwood operationally profitable. And, you know, Pino Rosso and Justify were our best two-looking yearlings that year. And, you know, I put a high enough reserve and in the back of my mind, hoping maybe that they wouldn't sell. But on both of those horses, I tried to stay in for 50% after they sold. And Windstar already had a partner with China Horse Club, and Rapoli had a partner with Vinny Viola, so I couldn't get back into it when the hammer went down for both of the yearlings. But that's just part of. I just chalk it up to fate. I mean, that's what happens, you know. But so you know, I've been lucky with a lot of the horses that didn't sell that I continued on to race that have gone on to win a lot of graded stakes races. So it sort of all pans out in the end, you know.
It's a cultivation. I mean, because you're watching and when Tanya is comparing pedigrees and looking at crosses and looking at physicals and trying to determine the pairings, and you know, particularly when it comes to Scat Daddy, this feels now like lightning in a bottle, given you know his premature passing and you know how he was coming to a head himself in his stallion career.
Yeah, it was so unfortunate that he died at such an early age. But, you know, Tanya was in investment banking, as you know, and she's very analytical. And she was on to Scat Daddy very early in his career. And like we read to him, I think it was $25,000 or $35,000 at the time. And as you know, he went shortly thereafter. He was standing for a fee of $100,000. But, you know, Tanya spends hours and hours on meetings just doing one meeting to one mare. And she, as you mentioned, she goes back several generations in the pedigree, does a lot of analyzing. And it's just been amazing the success we've had because of it. So I certainly owe a lot of success to Glenwood, to Tanya, and the entire Glenwood staff, because you just can't do these things on your own.
Bring us back a little bit and talk about Stage Magic, because you bred her, and she actually comes herself from a very nice line of familiar names, including Joe Allen, Magical Illusion. Your
right.
Mare selection. How does that start?
Well, when I was at the November sale, I saw Magic Illusion. I loved her race record, and she had an injury. I mean, she ran third in the Coaching Club American Oaks to a shadow. So, and she won her first race by about a dozen lengths. But I liked everything about her. I liked her pedigree, and I'm just so fortunate that she produced a mare like Stage Magic. And one thing I can say about Justify, he looks more like Stage Magic than he does Scat Daddy. So that mare really, really is predominant in what she produces. And we have a half-brother to Justify, and he looks very similar to Justify. He's a big, strong-looking yearling, and he also looks like Stage Magic a lot. So it's quite interesting thinking about it.
That's the Will Take Charge colt?
Yes, the Will Take Charge. He's as impressive-looking as a yearling as Justify was. He's an awesome-looking individual. And once again, he looks like the mayor, stage magic.
It was interesting, too, as part of the progeny storyline with her, the fact that, just the previous week, the lieutenant made himself a great-at-stake winner, the older brother.
Yeah, I mean, that was fantastic as well. So now you have another great-at-stakes winner out of that mare. So, it's just amazing. So I just hope it continues on.
On that topic, John, her lieutenant was her first, and he's by Street Sense. Did she lose her second foal, or did she skip?
I think she might have skipped. I'm pretty sure she skipped. I don't remember her losing a foal, no.
Well, then Scat Daddy, and then now the Will Take Charge, and there was also a Pioneer of the Nile out there, right?
Yeah, she had a Pioneer of the Nile foal this spring, and he's very good-looking as well. And then we bred her back to Quality Road this spring, and the day of the Belmont, you had two Quality Roads win Grade One's Belmont Weekend. I mean,
absolutely.
Quality Road looks like he's turning in to be a great sire. And next
so
year
it's
we're
interesting.
Going to Curlin.
And then Curlin?
Curlin's coming next year, yeah. We'll breed the Curlin next year.
Well, and of course, with the opportunity to go back to Scat Daddy, that gone. And this is she's a young mare, right? She's only 11, 12.
Yes, she's still a young mare. So touch wood. I hope she throws many, many foals down the road.
You were quoted during this Triple Crown run and as even before Derby, as saying that these were your two best colts when we talk about Justify and Vino Rosso. How has your approach changed in terms of what you sell and what you keep?
Well, I probably feel much like August Belmont II when he sold Man of War. this Will Take Charge. I'm thinking of not selling him. I might bring a partner into him privately, but I don't think I'm going to take him over to the yearling sale. I mean, he looks so special, and it's changing the business plan a little bit, but my heart says, maybe we should just race this one, because when Stage Magic foaled this Will Take Charge baby, I saw him lying in the stall, and his legs were so long, and he looked so impressive. Just the day that he was born, I told Tanya, we can't sell this one, not even thinking about Justify. I mean, he hadn't even started the race yet.
Sure.
And I said that the minute I laid eyes on this foal. So my heart's got to stay with what I thought at the time with this particular individual.
On that topic, too, as he, you didn't get a chance clearly to watch him as a 2-year-old in training, but
no.
As he grew, I mean, the fact that he was turning into a big horse physically, that can change perspective too about the saleability and that the big good looking yearlings, they always sell well.
Yes, he was a very good size for a yearling, but to see him later on. As you say, I never saw him as a 2-year-old, but to see how he developed after the sale it's incredible. I mean, as Baffert said, he's one of the best looking horses he's ever trained, and I think he's close to 17 hands now. So it's very interesting, just what a fantastic look. Well, not unexpected because he was a good-looking yearling, but he's even turned out better than you could ever imagine physically.
We should fold in, you know, obviously the Scat Daddy portion brought a certain discussion point about the classic distances, John. But when you bring up how much of a stamp Stage Magic has put on her get, I suppose Ghost Zapper's presence as the broodmare sire of Stage Magic, that he's part of this story, and so is Pulpit.
Yeah, the Ghost Zapper would be very influential. I mean, he was certainly bred to go a distance of ground himself as well. So it all sort of came together, you know. But for sure, Ghost Zapper is certainly a strong influence in that pedigree.
Given your size, because that's been a big part of the Glenwood story, what's your method? I've asked this of other breeders in terms of culling and keeping the broodmare band the manageable size that you have.
Well, you got to look at their race record to some degree and their pedigree. You know, we get a lot of fillies from the few mares that we have, so you can't keep them all. You sort of have to cull a little bit each year, and that can be a difficult decision. But Tanya's involved in a lot of planning when it comes to keeping the numbers down, and it's never really that easy to do, but it seems to be working out so far. I'm sure there's always a few that'll come back to haunt you, but that's just part of the business you're in.
Well, it certainly feels like we're going to be looking forward to the younger brother of Justify racing in your familiar maroon jacket with the blue circle. And John, I have seen your name for so long, and you know you've got a reputation as a bit of a hard charger and someone who with exacting standards, and this feels like the result of your approach to the sport and to the game.
Well, thank you very much. Another interesting statistic, I guess, would you know, Glenwood Farm has had 7 horses make the starting gate in the Kentucky Derby. That statistic alone is an amazing number, and 5 of them are homebred, so you know there must be something in that soil down there for sure.
Well, it's not that they say the bedrock, right? But the limestone, yeah. but there's also something going on above ground, and that's a testimony to you and your daughter. And
thanks very much.
A tremendous accomplishment.
Thanks a lot.
John Gunther, everybody. And you can follow both John and Tanya on Twitter, John D. Gunther. I must have noticed, I guess, last year probably, or maybe the beginning of the year. And you can follow both. And Tanya, I think this just has Tanya Gunn. Tanya G-U-N. And for John, it's John D. Gunther. No punctuation or underscores. But I wanted to underscore the recap of the weekend and Justify's accomplishment with John Gunther. You work hard and you make these decisions, and Tanya's part in this, and they've really cultivated a sterling reputation and have bred. How about that? I didn't even realize the number was that high. 7 Derby starters, and now a Triple Crown winner in Justify. I had to bring up Kimberlite Pipe because that it was fun to hear. I think I surprised John with that a little bit. But Kimberlite Pipe, who won the
Did he win the, what did he win? Did he win the Arkansas Derby? Or the Louisiana? He won either the Arkansas or Louisiana Derby on his way to, on his way to the Kentucky Derby. When John said that, I pulled out the my Kentucky Derby media guide, the treasured 2012 edition, and then went back to look, and he really did. He ran sixth. He ran a good race in Charismatics. And John was partnered with Prairie Star Racing on Kimberlite Pipe, who was a field part of the field that day. Field horses went off, and he was the highest finishing member of the field in that Derby. Robbie Alvarado aboard. So that was fun. I'm delighted to finally get John Gunther on. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, and we're right on time. Graham Motion. Talk to Graham next, and we'll start to work our way through the weekend. So much to take in. Andy Serling, Andy's traveling tomorrow, so we'll talk to Andy on Wednesday. I haven't talked to Jay Pribman yet. Jay headed back yesterday, but I think what we'll do is we'll get Jay in here tomorrow and keep adding to the recapping and the evaluation of everything that went on, and so much did go on. A couple of other notes going back to Friday. I mentioned in passing Imperial Hint. He rated really comfortably, huh? Imperial Hint showing a interesting dimension that's going to make him. That was in the True North with Castellano. And I should mention, seeing as how John Gunther discussed the opportunity they're going to enjoy at Royal Ascot without parole, but the Queen with a winner, of course, on Friday in the Gold Cup. Call to mind the Galileo with Castellano. That was cool, right? The Queen win one. He also had early in the card the Better Roses, Lewis Bay, dominant, crushed, and then Arad Ortiz followed that up later. 4-star Crook, the New York bred, and Chad sending out that pair of winners. And 4-star Crook was really good, the Freud daughter, winning the New York Stakes. Let's take a break. We'll talk the Manhattan and the Miracle Ride by Edgar Prado next with Graham Motion.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old calibrated colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo. our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.